Like all segments of Wisconsin's economy, the state's farmers and the state's agricultural industry have been reeling from the results of recession and other market factors. Wisconsin Eye's series, Surviving the Recession, today focuses on farming and the state's ag industries. I want to thank four talented professionals, veteran professionals, for joining me. To my immediate left, Ben Bransel. He's now works for the UW-Madison, but he's a fifth-generation Marquette County farmer. He served in the legislature, former assembly speaker, former state agriculture secretary. Did I miss anything, Ben?
No, yes.
Thank you very much. To his left, John Umhafer, executive director of the Wisconsin Cheesemakers Association, had that job since 1992. Mm-hmm. Thanks for coming in, John.
Thank you.
To his left, Bob Toppel. He's a Waterloo area farmer. You're on the board of Foremost Farms USA,
yes.
Bob,
mm-hmm.
And you milk about 280 head.
Yep.
Thank you very much for coming in.
You're
last
welcome.
But not least, Tom Lochner, executive director of the Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association. Your industry grows and sells the number one fruit in Wisconsin.
Fruit crop in the state, you bet.
Well, must be an interesting time in agriculture and farming. Ben, perhaps you can take an overview, the longest look, draw on your five generations of history and your been in the Capitol and ag secretary. Good time or bad time for the industry?
I think it's a good time. We've gone through some pretty tough times in our history with depressions, floods, droughts, and then the roller coaster ride of the 80s financial. Presently is a serious challenge with a worldwide recession, which impacts all of our markets, as well as the recession here in the United States. I think most of our producers are sitting down with their paper and pencil and their computers and calculators, and they're working hard at trying to figure out how they can position themselves for the future. It's always easier to look out at the future when you're coming out of something than to not experience it going in and you haven't prepared for it.
You most worried about people like Bob, dairy farmers like him, right now?
Presently, the dairy industry has been hit with some pretty tough challenges, and of course, as the farming dairy industry goes, so goes our manufacturing sector in the dairy industry, which provides a huge number of jobs for our state.
You sound optimistic, Mr. Secretary.
I think we're in pretty good shape compared to what we were in the 1980s.
Okay. John, let me read from your last newsletter. You ready?
Sure.
Optimism is the only choice for the dairy industry as it looks to the end of a chaotic year for dairy farmers. For many farms, a turn for the worse in 2010 is not an option. Can you explain that?
Well, it was a tough year, 2009, and like Ben, I'd like to look forward, but I think we do need to look back. Last year saw the dairy price to the farmer drop by about a third. We had prices, all milk price in Wisconsin, around $19 per hundredweight in 2008. In 2009, that went down to $13 a hundredweight, and now we're seeing the seasonal price drop again. So we've had a rally in the cheese market. We had a $1.70 cheese price at wholesale. That's gone down to $1.45 just in the last 2 weeks. That's a seasonal market, and we hope it stops falling. Last year, about this time, it was $1.04, so we're at $1.45 a pound for cheese versus $1.04 last year. So far, so good.
So you're worried about the dairy industry, but your cheese farmer's doing pretty well?
On the cheese side...
Or cheese producers, excuse me.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year. They've had good movement of cheese at low prices. Great sales into retail because people are packing their own lunches this and last year, but restaurant sales are down, and often that's a more value-added product. So it's a mixed bag.
Bob, last week the governor's office said this. This is a quote from Governor Doyle. Wisconsin dairy farmers have had one of their worst years since the Great Depression. Losses estimated to average about $750 a cow. Could you give us the perspective of a dairy farmer?
Governor Doyle's estimate there is probably more accurate for over the state because there's 13,000 farmers in the state of Wisconsin. There's 13,000 different situations. And it really depends upon what kind of business model you have. If you depend upon a lot of purchase grains, if you recently built or you're in quite a high equity position or a high borrowed leverage position, you're certainly going to be in much dire straits than someone who hasn't. Someone who's young, just getting into the business, may be more challenged than a more seasoned person. So it varies quite a bit. John talked about 2008. For a lot of producers, the second half of 2008 was probably as severe as all of 2009. If you were buying commodities and you were depending upon delivery and with the fuel cost, those commodities really drove the cost of production up. We saw interest rates in 2008 were much higher than they were in 2009. Fuel cost basically was in half from 2008 to 2009. So a lot of these things, even though the prices come down, so have our cost. If our cost would have stayed where they were in 2008, there would have been a severe exodus of producers. But because the Wisconsin agriculture is based a lot on producing their own crops, and a lot of it was grows on the farm, stays on the farm for feed, their costs were much lower than a lot of other areas of the country, which forced them to make more serious adjustments to their inventories. And that's why Wisconsin agriculture, in a lot of ways, Wisconsin dairying at least, has grown. We've continued to outproduce last year's production month after month after month. So, and there's also a lot of producers, you recognize the only way you're going to get out of this is to have more units. So you produce more milk to drive your fixed cost down per unit. So you milk more cows, and that lowers your cost of production. So,
are the costs on your farm, do you estimate you're losing up to $1,000 per
Yeah, that's pretty close.
And you're now getting how much for your milk?
We got $15.06 per hundredweight as a November settlement.
Which is a big rebound from one figure I saw was $9.24 per hundredweight in January.
I think our lowest prices were probably about May or June in that $9 range.
Wow. Thank you. And, Tom, cranberries. Yeah. You got some good news over there? We've been hearing some tough
well, I think
comments.
Cranberry industry in Wisconsin is strong economically. It's not to say we're not without challenges, but here in Wisconsin, we're producing about 60% of the nation's crop. About half the world's supply comes out of Wisconsin. We do that with 250 growers farming about 18,000 acres of land. We went through our low pricing cycle in 99, 2000, 2001. Because we're the nature of cranberries, our price and market cycles tend to be longer. It's not like corn and soybeans where this year you can decide to plant corn and next year maybe soybeans based on market response. When we plant cranberries, it takes 2 to 3 years to get a first crop and 3 to 5 to 7 to get into full production. So the planting cycle is a little bit longer, hence the marketing cycle is longer. But we had a record crop in 2008 of 4.4 million barrels. This year we had the second largest crop in history at just around 4 million barrels. So we've been doing pretty well. The pricing has recovered from the 8 to 10 cents a pound we were getting in 99 and 2000 to about 50 to 55 cents a pound on last year's crop. We don't know what we're going to get this year. So we've seen movement, and growers are able to be profitable at those numbers. Question is where are we going to go in the future? We've grown international markets from virtually non-existent 15 to 20 years ago to where we're exporting 25 to 30% of the crop today. And we hope to continue to build on those marketing efforts overseas and developing some of the new products that consumers are going to use or that people over there look for. But it's always going to be a challenge for us to make sure that we can keep our costs down, maintain our competitive advantage here in Wisconsin for Wisconsin growers. And those are something that those are things that we work on every day.
You said a couple things I want to come back to. Number one is, why is it that Wisconsin produces more than half of the world's cranberry crop? Is there land? Is there?
It's a host. We've always been number one and two with Massachusetts, and we passed them about 12 or 15 years ago. And a lot of it has to do with availability of land, resources here in Wisconsin. We have the ideal climate to grow. Cranberries were native here. We've got a growing culture in that it's not an easy crop to grow, and we have a lot of experienced growers who have shared that information with other people, and we've seen the number of growers increase from when I started. There were about 150 growers. Today there's about 250. That's an increase of 100 over 20 years, so it's not a dramatic increase, but nonetheless it shows growth. We have more acres. Our acres are about twice as productive as the rest of the country. So not only do we have a few more acres than, say, Massachusetts, but we also produce at twice the per acre rate. We have the University of Wisconsin system here, which and University Extension, which are part of the intellectual capacity that we have in Cranberries. They've been very helpful to us in developing new varieties and new practices to make us more productive. And we've had we've got the infrastructure here in the state too in terms of the support of the industry. We've got the crop consultants. We've got the people to make the specialized machinery. The people, the fertilizer dealers, the chemical dealers, the financial. The people are here in Wisconsin. We've got a very good infrastructure on that, and we have the processing facilities here. So Wisconsin is the best place in the world to grow cranberries as far as we're concerned. We'd like to grow more of them here.
And then a very quick follow-up. Sure. 25% of our crop is now exported to foreign countries. Mm. Which foreign country is number one consumer?
Great Britain is by far the largest. Germany would be second. Mexico is third. We're in about we're, as an industry, in about 12 different countries that we've targeted for markets. Those are the top three by far.
And you've got some niche markets growing. They're fond of cranberry pizzas in Germany.
Germans like cranberries. Cranberry pizzas are one of the things. It's interesting. We've developed a sweetened dried cranberry. The industry has, and that has been very. It makes cranberries very flexible in those markets, so that processors in those countries have figured out new and innovative ways to use them. Cranberry pizza is one of the newer ones, but I've seen, you know, growers here are very innovative, and they can use cranberries in about any food that you can think of.
And there's a James Bond icicle type drink in which company?
I think that's in Great Britain. It's in Europe and France. It's like a popsicle, only it's in the shape of James Bond, and it's cranberry flavored.
Did you know that, gentlemen? Did you know that?
It's
amazing.
We didn't develop that.
But it's part of, how you have changed mm-hmm. to keep the cranberry industry thriving and growing, correct?
Yeah.
Find the international markets, and if they want to turn it into a James Bond look-alike popsicle, fine, right?
Yeah, well, I think, and that's the key to when you're selling food and you're competing, is one of our successes is that we look at the marketplace, what the consumer wants to buy, and we try and meet that demand. If a consumer wants a particular product, we're going to try and provide it. If they don't want it, we're not going to try and sell it to them. And I think you have to anticipate that. And you have to build your products to meet those have that consumer confidence that it's high quality, that tastes good, and that it's something that that they want. And if you're going to do that, you're going to be fairly successful in marketing to them.
Could I ask generally, have you seen any direct repercussions in your products as a result of the recession? Things that have influenced maybe you on the farm or you with cheese directly as a result of the recession? And anything occur to you? You're still an Angus beef cattle grower, you and your son. And daughter-in-law?
Well, when you get into recession pressure, sometimes some of those higher dollar value commodities are a little harder to move, challenging. Well, the Angus certified beef program, which everybody thinks there's only one kind of beef in the United States, which is good news for us Angus breeders, some of those higher end cuts are a little more difficult to move than we've experienced in the past, but I'm not sure that that's going to be the downfall of any one single industry.
So you have seen less demand for some of your higher end Angus cuts?
The real costly cuts have
as a result
found some
of the
pressure,
recession.
Yes.
Dave, Bob?
Well, we've seen such a variation. I've heard some of the highest end cheeses are actually selling better this last year than they had in previous years, and then when you go to the white tablecloth restaurant, sales are down pretty significantly. I think people treat cheese as a little luxury that if they're going to go to a party, they can still afford, so they'll spend that $10 on that, perhaps versus a bottle of wine. So you're seeing niches grow in the industry, and we do have a lot of niche makers forming. What's happened really over the last decade is cheese has become an all value-added product in Wisconsin. We simply don't thrive anymore on the mild cheddars and the mozzarellas for shredding, what we'd call commodities in our industry. Even our cheddar now is made to age. It's made to be special. Mozzarella is made to brown a certain way or to stretch a certain way off the pizza. We're trying to get an extra penny for everything we make in Wisconsin.
But I go to your website. Mozzarella and cheddar are your number one and two.
Right. That's
accounting
true.
For about 62%.
That's right. That's where you had to add some value. Otherwise, you're going to get that base price that you'll see at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. We try to get the value-added price by making those special cheddars and mozzarellas. But what's really been growing is specialty cheeses. There are 75 companies now in the state that are making something special. So either it's a flavored cheese or it's a feta or an Asiago or a blue, something that's going to gain the extra 50 cents versus the extra nickel.
Bob, you're a brave guy to sit here and lose $1,000 a head and still smile. But how much of that, is can you attribute to the recession, if any, sir?
Well, I don't know what percentage, but I would say by far the majority. In 2008, we had about 10% of the production nationwide milk was going overseas. Because of the recession in the fall of 2008, those markets dried up, and all that milk just backed up in the system. So we lost about half of those exports over a 2 or 3 month period, which was started in October, November, December. Well, all that milk backed up into the system, and by January that we were just drowning, and the milk was getting, it was starting to back up, and it was getting sold in Chicago and some of these things. We had no control over it, and because we're in the process of producing, and the only way you can continue to, you know, survive is to keep producing, those prices hit those lows. If the foreign markets went to dry it up, if those exports went to dry it up, we went to saw the dip that we saw. Mm-hmm. Because we were meeting the demand all the way along. In fact, we were increasing to meet that world demand because that was our growth area. And just because of, you know, the country's economy is not being able to afford it or choosing not to purchase it, even with the banking industry getting as much trouble as it was, they couldn't borrow the money to buy the non-fat and to buy the cheese and to buy what they were buying. It just backed up and hurt us all. Now we need to correct that. We need to cut that production back until, you know, and turn it around.
Well, that was my next question. How do dairy farmers like you try to control costs? Do you cull your herd? Do you mix what you're feeding your cows?
Well, two things can't change, and that's nutrition. You have to continue to maintain proper nutrition and cow comfort, animal care. Those things can't change. That's priority one. So you look to other areas. You look to control costs through limiting repairs and maintenance, and you looked, you certainly cut out any capital purchases, which hurts the rest of the economy. Any supplies purchases, you go through and you look and say, where can I cut? Where can I buy it the cheapest? Maybe your present supplier isn't going to lower his price, so you find a supplier who will. All those things take place on a daily basis. You're constantly reviewing where your money's being spent and where you can cut. And there's a lot of traditional partnerships been built that have been destroyed because of pricing and just needing to go and find the lowest price and survive as a farm.
I quoted Governor Doyle early. Hang on, Tom, I'll get to you. But sure. I quoted this press release from Governor Doyle was announcing the Dairy Economic Loss Assistance Program had been signed into law. Mm-hmm. That's going to give dairy farmers nationally $290 million of that. $57 million is expected to go to Wisconsin. Is that just a grant program?
No, that was a direct payment
direct
to producers.
Payment.
Yeah, we received that just prior to Christmas, I think the 23rd, the checks were written. But it amounted to 32 cents per hundredweight. And if you lost, you know, $6, $5 to $6 a hundred for 10 months, 32 cents, you know, it's a nice gesture, but it doesn't fix any of the holes. It doesn't change anything going forward. It didn't really fix any of the past. But it made for a nice Christmas present, I guess.
Well, I understand.
It was unexpected by a lot of producers.
Where would farmers like you have been without that payment from the feds?
Probably in the same place we are right now.
Okay, because it wasn't that significant.
It wasn't that significant. Like I say, you can't lose $1,000 a cow, get 32 cents a hundred and make it up.
I think there's three things that will put pressure on the agricultural community even coming out of the recession that will determine whether people are successful in agriculture or not. One is regulatory pressure.
Yeah, that's on my list to get to. Go ahead, Ben.
Okay, one is regulatory pressure. One is input costs, which Bob alluded to earlier, and the other one is credit availability.
Mm-hmm.
Those three parts of the backing for agriculture is really what's going to determine the long-term success, more so than the recession of 2009.
And which of those three factors, Ben, are you most concerned about? Regulatory, input, or credit?
Well, I think it varies from industry to industry, and okay. I think some of the industries will find credit to be the challenge. Some of them, if you're strictly into crop production, it may be the input costs. The markets look good, but the input costs can drag on you. And some of the other parts of the industry, it's regulatory pressures. And meeting some of those requirements will drain a lot of revenues out of agriculture.
Regulatory. I've been reading your columns. Mm-hmm. Phosphorus, manure. What's the issue there?
Yeah, if I had to pick one of those three, it would be the regulatory pressures. And what I hear from my manufacturers is whey and wastewater. We need to improve profitability on the whey side, and we need to get a handle on the wastewater side. And really, from a dairy plant, wash water is rinsing out the vats, rinsing out the lines, and you get a milky wash water coming out of the plant. And right now, frankly, there's pressure from the DNR on substances like chloride, salt, and phosphorus that's naturally in the milk is passing through the wash water, and we're either applying it to the land or treating it and putting it in state waters. The concern there is that the costs are going to rise rapidly there as DNR and EPA look at really clamping down on phosphorus, taking it down to levels that are to the point of drinking water, really, for the state. So we're looking at hundreds of millions of dollars, possibly in the next few years, that could come our way as costs, new costs.
You haven't even mentioned the climate change bill that the legislature is going to debate,
not yet.
Which the Farm Bureau Federation and WMC is against. Bob, any of that sound ring true?
I would say what Ben says, certainly all three are right up there. When you talk about the climate change, I mean, I mentioned in 08, energy was a major cost to us. Electricity, we use a large amount of electricity on the dairy. But if you look at the cost of the natural gas that went into anhydrous fertilizer and drove urea costs and our cost on that side, the cost of transportation for the feed and everything to come onto the farm, we were paying surcharge after surcharge coming in, and we were paying surcharges to have the milk taken off the farm. Those drove our costs tremendous. We look at regulatory. I know your viewers probably don't like to see the large farms, but in order to control and meet the regulatory needs to control the phosphorus, to have the manure storage, to have all the things to fit, to have the clean water part, it's going to require a large amount of number of cows on a specific farm to make that work.
You're talking about the proposal, isn't it, for a 2,600 head at Rosendale? Do I have that right?
They're going to be 8,000 or 4,000 now. Basically, if you're looking at putting in a manure storage, putting in digester, you're going to need 1,000 cows to make that work. Manure storage on a smaller scale, you can put it in a hole, but the cost of building that, you need the units in order to make that work. So there's a lot of things that will continue to drive to larger farms through the regulatory and order and energy costs. And then again, you got the other one mentioned is the capital. Are we going to be able to get the dollars we need to do the expansions that we need to?
Before we get to Tom, and I promise we'll get to you, Tom, what's the average cow generate in waste per day? I heard the figure. We can move on if you don't know, but it's you don't know. Okay, Tom, effect of the recession. You do cranberries. Tell us in cranberries. The effect of the recession on cranberry industry. Any?
We've seen the market demands have flattened off from maybe some of the earlier projections, and the impacts come from people changing their purchasing patterns, and we've had to discount prices of products. Domestically, there's been a lot of discounting that's gone on juices and products like that. So as those are sell for less, obviously, at the retail level, that passes on back to the grower in terms of the returns that they get from whoever they're selling their fruit to. And on the international side, with fluctuations in the value of the dollar and the international economy, there's been some instability there, or some impacts there. I think, as we look at some of the cost factors for growers, fuel costs were a lot higher 2 years ago than they are now, so there may be a little bit of benefit on that side as well. But there's concern within the industry overall what the overall economy is doing in terms of cranberry consumption, because we get to be a little bit of a a luxury product rather than a staple, although we think everybody ought to be drinking a glass of cranberry juice a day for their health. A lot of people look for other juices, other cheaper things in the store. When
you want me to drink a glass of cranberry juice, you want me to drink a glass of milk, correct? Go ahead.
Three.
Sure.
Three?
See, if we only have one in the morning, it's good for your urinary tract health. And it's got vitamin C and all kinds of good stuff in it. We're just looking out for your health.
I understand. The three factors mentioned by Ben,
I would say
regulatory input and credit?
I would say regulatory is probably our biggest challenge right now.
But you have got, for more than 100 years, your industry has had a series. It's constitutional, isn't it, to protect cranberries?
No.
Right?
No, it's not constitutional. It's
statutory protection.
There is a piece of law in Wisconsin's water law that allows growers to access water without a permit from the Department of Natural Resources.
And that goes back to?
The 1800s, 1867 was when the law was originally adopted. It's been modified over time. And the whole interpreted by the courts over time, as well as the regulatory environment has changed quite a bit since, even in the past 10 years. I've been with the Growers Association for 20 years, but we've seen a lot of changes in wetland regulations, in water quality regulations, in water usage regulations, and those have all come back to impact our growers. I see that as probably our biggest concern going forward. DNR is rewriting their runoff rules under NR 151. They're basing those rules right now. The standards are based on crop needs. They're changing that and throwing out that consideration and saying we're only going to be concerned about water quality impacts for whatever standards we set. We're concerned about water quality. I think everybody in agriculture is, but the question is how do you meet water quality standards, and what are those standards going to be? How are you going to set them, and how are they feasible? We've had the opportunity here in Wisconsin, and we worked very hard with the governor's office and with DNR and the Corps of Engineers to set up reforms to the permitting process for impacting wetlands in the state, which are horrendous. We seem to be more concerned, and wetlands are important and need to be protected, but I think most people, as they look at what their vision of a wetland is versus what's being protected, are two different things. We're talking about low spots in cornfields that require a federal permit, require state approval, and require a lengthy permitting process. We're talking about those types of projects and those type of regulatory environments where we'd like to be able to convert those fields of cranberry production, take advantage of market opportunity that's out there so the industry can continue to grow here. Those are the challenges that we face. We lose 25,000 to 35,000 acres of farmland a year in this state to development. To development. We lost about 100 acres of wetlands last year. Now, wetlands are valuable, and our growers have been involved in wetland protection and management and creation and restoration for 100 and some years, so we understand, we live that every day. But at the same time, there has to be some type of a balance between impacting a wetland to convert it to a cranberry farm versus compare that impact versus what a development of a parking lot or a shopping center or something like that may have. We're viewed as having the same impact, and our impacts are a lot different. So those regulatory requirements going forward, access to water, groundwater regulation, water quality regulation, and wetland regulation all fall very hard on us and are putting a lot of pressure on our growers as we're trying to grow the industry here and to farm and maintain our competitive advantage. We've seen the efforts from outside of the U.S., from Canada, to develop an industry. The province of Quebec has gone from having no cranberries 15 years ago to having about 6,000 acres of cranberries planted in the last 15 years. The Maritime Republics of Nova Scotia have come in and are actively recruiting growers, and they're providing government assistance to develop cranberries there. And that's what we're competing against. We'd like to see those acreages planted here in Wisconsin. But at the end of the day, those acres are going to go where they're wanted and where it's economically makes sense and where regulatory it makes sense. And we're losing some of those acres outside of the country, even though we're growing the industry here. We want to maintain our leadership, and one of the things we need to do is take a long, hard look at the regulations that agencies here pass and the legislature takes a look at as to what those impacts are going to be. And I think sometimes it's easy to say, well, we're all for wetland protection, but then when we write a bill or write a rule and it gets implemented at the field level, it's not what people are, what the original objective of the legislation or the rule is going to be. And it's hurting. We're seeing impacts on our industry here, and I'm sure the rest of agriculture is as well.
Well, and a farm with 8,000 cows is going to draw no small amount of concern from its neighbors.
Sure.
I guess my next question is, are you gentlemen more worried about international forces, or do you see international factors as something that's got to help your industries? Your thought, Ben,
well,
on international?
I think international, in that arena, it's competitive out there. And when you start to price your products in the international markets, you gotta recognize what the financial picture looks like. You gotta recognize who your competition is, and depending on whether you're selling corn or wheat or milk, you're selling against a different country with different subsidies and stuff.
And we have a weaker dollar. Is that a factor too? Well, go ahead. I didn't get a chance to finish.
Yeah, when you go into the financial situation, the dollar and the strength and the weakness of the dollar impacts. But a lot of the challenges that our agricultural industry in the state of Wisconsin will be impacted by the greatest is the NIMBY, not
in my backyard.
And that could be a harder sell to get through from one generation to another, as generations and generations have to kind of transfer their ownership of their properties and the way they structure their farming operations and what it takes to be successful.
And they
in the
run
future.
Into new values because we're developing more urban areas. I'm sorry, Ben, go ahead.
And you'll run into the NIMBY syndrome, and when you have, not in my backyard, a lot of pressure is put on you, whether you're raising cranberries, trying to set up a feedlot for beef, or you're trying to milk cows. The neighbors will have a lot to say with whether you are successful or not.
Mm-hmm. John or Bob on the, well, he's...
On the international, since milk is, and speaking specifically of milk, is perishable and can't move, but you can take milk apart and you can put it back together in thousands of different ways, which gives us opportunities. What we need, I think, in our federal system is to change some of those standards and to allow for a lot more of that, experimentation or creation of new products that we could then become, because we're not going to be able to compete against Europe in butter and non-fat dry milk against the Oceania countries, New Zealand and Australia. That we just, our cost structure is inherently higher than, and we can't compete. But we can take milk apart, we can make it into products, ship them overseas and grow. But I think the concern for Wisconsin, and you talked about Rosendale dairy of 8,000 cows, you can go to Delhart, Texas and be permitted for a 10,000 cow dairy, and they welcome you because it's not a 40,000 cow beef lot. So it's all relative to where you're coming from.
Okay.
If we had all 8,000 cow dairies in Wisconsin, citing another one wouldn't be an issue because it's the first one and it's the largest one. It gets a big bullseye on its chest. But that dairy is going to be ran probably better than a 40-cow dairy who lets his cows wander through the creek out to the pasture, as far as what phosphorus leaves that farm. And he's going to have the acres to, in order for the manure management plan, nutrient management plan. All those things are going to be so highly regulated because he's got that bullseye on his chest that the incidence or the proper management of that farm is going to be much better than so many other smaller farms that are under the radar that aren't being looked at. So that's the challenge we have. In order to meet the needs going forward, we're going to grow our farms, and we're going to be regulated, and we're going to have the dollars, and we're going to have the knowledge and all this stuff to run these bigger dairies the way everybody thinks we should run them, and that's going to all add cost.
John, there's more competition in the international market for our cheeses?
Yeah, to your question, that market has found us. It is truly an international market for dairy now. Our prices this last 15 months have been dependent on the world market. It's no longer a question of whether we like that or not.
Falling from 170 to 140?
Yeah, we were in that market.
As a result of the international
pressure? Not so much this fall, but last fall when you saw prices drop 70 cents a pound of cheese, that was due to the process that he was talking about, where we went from 10% international sales down to 5% in a very short time with the recession. That market's got to be taken up by the United States and by Wisconsin. We can't avoid it anymore. What's interesting about the dairy export market is it's a knife edge. If one country produces a little bit less milk a year, the export market fluctuates wildly. It's about a 1% market. So if New Zealand has a drought, dairy prices go up worldwide. If Australia has rain, the opposite happens. So it's an interesting market.
My next question.
One of the challenges there was when we talk about this export market, was whey powder in 2008 was $2 a pound. By March, it was 80 cents.
Right.
And how do you adapt your business going, you know, to deal with those kind of fluctuations? And a lot of that whey powder was factored in that $20 a hundred that we were getting for our milk, mm-hmm. because it was part of the formula that determines our price of milk.
Asia is coming into our market and they're buying sporadically. China, Japan, other markets, they haven't become regular customers yet, and we're seeing them enter and leave the market and watch that gyrate milk prices. And
I haven't heard China.
Oh yeah, China
was a major player
right
in that.
They're buying a lot of whole milk powder right now and a lot of whey powder.
Which government could be the most potential help to your industries, national or state? Tom?
That's a good question. I think right now probably the state is where a lot of the issues are going to lie. And I preface that by saying that within the federal government, through Senator Cole and Representative Obie and Kagan and Kind, who have been working with the industry and represent a large part of the industry, and Senator Feingold to some extent as well, but more so the latter because they deal with the appropriations side of things. The federal government has been very responsive in terms of our working with them. We were able to secure some funding secure a program for cranberry research in the Farm Bill. USDA's Agricultural Research Service is going to establish a cranberry research program here at the University of Wisconsin. I'm working with Ben and other people at the college to place two ARS scientists on the Madison campus to work solely on cranberry, which is huge for our industry. And Senator Cole and Representative Obie really helped, from Wisconsin, really helped with that in their positions. Going forward, we're looking at some other funding opportunities. We've got some conservation dollars through USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service for the last 6 years to put conservation plans and programs on cranberry farms so we do a better job of managing nutrients, of managing our water, of taking a look at overall irrigation systems and being much more efficient with that, being much more efficient with any chemicals that we use, whether it's pesticides or whether it's fertilizers. Mm-hmm. So on the federal side of things, we've been very pleased with the support we've had. There's some other things that may be coming up. But I think on the regulatory side of things, the ball is in the state's court to really take a look at how the regulations are implemented and how they impact, taking a look at some of the economic costs that are occurring and taking a longer term picture that if we go to a situation where Wisconsin is has a regulatory environment that's viewed negatively, whether it's for cranberries or dairy or any of the industries here in the state, that is going to drive business out of the state. People may want to deny that's going
to
occur.
Nova Scotia, Quebec?
Well, I mean, we're literally sending our manufacturing sector to China because we put additional costs on them in terms of regulatory, and I don't speak for the manufacturing sector, but we see that occurring all the time. That's why we're losing manufacturing jobs. Where are they going? They're going overseas, and one of the reasons is it's easier to do business over there. And those types of that takes away our competitive advantage. Here in Wisconsin, we have a number of competitive advantages when it comes to cranberries. But as we take a look at that regulatory environment, We don't want that to become a competitive disadvantage, and we're at the tipping point for that to occur.
I understand. Bob, national or state, help government help you more?
A couple of years ago, with Governor Doyle's help and the state legislator and the Grow Wisconsin, did a lot of things to help Wisconsin grow their dairy industry. Livestock siting was one of them. The dairy investment tax credit. There's a lot of things that Secretary Nielsen's doing is initiated and been able to get done that has helped the Wisconsin dairy industry as far as farmers be able to grow their dairies, do it in an economically and environmentally sound way. So I think the state is positioned pretty good. You can see that by the cows are coming back here. It's often been said the cows are going to go where they're wanted, and the regulations are so high that they're not wanted here, they're going to find someplace else. And that's why we saw for so long the dairies in the West grow and the dairies in Texas grow, because the regulations were less. The regulations in California to site a 5,000 cow dairy, the cost of that pit permit is $300,000. You can come to Wisconsin and basically for $1,500 get the same thing done. So you're seeing dairies look at Wisconsin and the upper Midwest much more favorably. I think now what we need to turn our attention to, and that's the federal, we need to take a long, hard look at the federal milk pricing, the federal order system. A lot of people think, well, the government sets the price. Well, the government doesn't set the price. They have a formula by which the price is determined. And they also have the dairy support program. That $9.90 isn't much of a support, as we found out this last year, when you're losing that kind of money. We need to take a look at that and figure out, is there a way that we can maybe make some direct payments to have some income security to producers and let the markets find their market, let new producer or new processors come in, invent some things that haven't been invented yet on what to do with milk, and create markets that haven't been created. But we have a system that was set up in the 1930s that's very limited going forward to be able to continue to grow the industry the way we want
to
grow.
That's a pricing model that's based on
benchmarking. A pricing model.
Claire, isn't it?
That's another 2-hour special.
Okay, all right.
That doesn't exist anymore, but it's okay. They keep tweaking the system, but we really need to have a major overhaul.
John, in a recent column, it looked to me like you looked for changes you like to see come out of Madison, right?
Yeah, I'd give the tip there to state regulation versus federal. Federal is like you said, a 1930s boondoggle from the Depression. So fixing federal milk pricing is a whole nother matter. I've encouraged our members to get into marketing and branding and try to ignore what the federal milk price is doing and rise above it and not exist at that commodity level where you worry about every month's base milk price. But yeah, for us then it's the state regulation.
Brand really, and market, that's your advice.
That's right, brand and
market. Ben, national or state?
Well, it depends on which area you're looking at. I think if you look at the credit side of agriculture, you got to look at the national. Strength of the dollar. Many of our financial institutions are national now. They're not state-based. They're regulated nationally. The USDA, the Farm Service Agency, has a beginning farmer program. It has to be funded to help our young people get in, because if all we're going to do is save old guys like me, there is no future in agriculture. When you go to the regulation side, certainly you have to watch what the national people are doing with greenhouse gases, climate change, and some of those. Implementation is extremely valuable to understand how and when it's going to be implemented to let agriculture change, or at least prepare if there is change to come. When you take a look at the marketing structure, I think the national is where you have to start looking at because locally you're going to have people like John that are going to be able to work with his community, get them to market in their niche markets. But when you start talking large commodities, then it's free trade. It's the way the international markets are established that are really important.
Okay, I only have two more questions. My next one is ethanol. That was the hottest thing going for a while, and then it got upside down a little bit. Ethanol, Ben.
Well, if you go back to the 1970s, methane digesters was a thing of the future. gas prices went high. Everybody thought that money would be put into the new technology, and we do research, we get up to speed. As soon as the gas price or the oil barrel barrel oil price fell, it dried up in the marketplace, and nobody even looked at methane gas. Now they're starting to talk. That's the future. The U.S., no matter what commodity you're in, is going to have to take a look at greater self-sufficiency when it comes to energy, whether it's biofuels, ethanols, depending on how you want to make your ethanol production work, or whether it's electricity and some of the alternative methods of generating electricity. Those are all important issues to agriculture.
Bob, do you grow corn?
Yes, we do.
Do you feed all of your corn to your animals?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
There's only a small amount that we sell off the farm, depending upon surplus.
As a corn grower, do you have any thought on the ethanol boom and then bust and whether it's going to...
I've always supported ethanol. I think it's an alternative. I know there's dairy producers who buy their own, buy all their grain that weren't real happy with it a year ago. But I think a year ago was an anomaly rather than. But I would hate like heck to see what would happen if the ethanol market today, the number of bushels that go through those plants would all be backed up. We'd see 50-cent corn. I mean, there's just no way that I'm not sure what the number is of bushels that go through those plants on a daily basis. But if that would all be backed up, the ability for the producer, whether it's a dairy producer or a corn producer, soybean producer, we have so much capacity to produce. It's limited a lot of times by the ability to market it. And if we would not have those outlets for ethanol, there wouldn't be any money made. The corn farmers would be in a much greater depression than dairy farmers are right now.
And corn's now trading at what? What is it?
What, 375?
375?
380?
I think the futures is even looking, March futures and some of those far off are even looking at 4.25 right now today. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a plus, I think, for the Wisconsin economy overall to have the price. Because, you know, like I mentioned earlier to you about the land values, having that price of corn stay high has helped the land value stay high, which allowed us to have the equity that it was able to ride through the storm as a dairy producer.
Okay, last question. Put on your future prognosticator hats. 5 years out in your industries, what's going to happen? What do you hope that's going to happen? Tom?
Oh, I hope that we're going to... 5 years out, I hope that we're going to see Wisconsin still being the leading cranberry producing area. I think from our perspective, we're going to hope that the industry continues to grow here in Wisconsin, that we're going to have some more acres in the ground. Our challenge is going to be to increase our knowledge base for the growers through research. We have concerns. We haven't talked about the University of Wisconsin, but that's a key partner for our industry and the rest of agriculture, and the resources that go from there are dwindling. There's fewer people there. We hope we can stabilize that so that on the Madison campus here at Cal's we'll see a strong core of faculty that are servicing agriculture here in Wisconsin. We're hoping that we're going to continue to see growth in overseas markets, continue to see growth in the domestic market, and that growers are profitable. I mean, if you're in agriculture, you have to be an optimist. I mean, that's just natural.
It's the way Ben opened the show.
Yeah, I mean, I always get chided by some of my friends that outside agriculture that, you know, they get a kick out of farmers. You ask them, nice rain last night. Well, yeah, it was nice, but we could add more, could add a little less, wouldn't have been as hard. It's too hot, too warm, too cold, whatever. But I think overall, when our growers go out to their farms and look around, they look for ways to improve it, and they look for ways to be more profitable so they can pass it on to the next generation. And I want to see our industry in a position where that next generation, which we're moving into sixth and seventh generation growers in our industry, and we think that's healthy, and it's reflective that not only so, you know, from the economic standpoint in terms of that it's a profitable business to be in, but that family members want to continue in it, and that we can continue to have cranberries produced by family farmers here in Wisconsin.
Thank you. Bob, five years out?
Well, I hope we continue to grow our operation. Okay. I have a daughter and son-in-law who farm with me. They want to make it their life.
They do.
They have a couple kids that would maybe want to make it their life. I'm not sure, but you have to continue to grow, though. You have to continue to innovate. I know when I was getting involved in farming back in the 70s, you know, there was things like pipelines and barn cleaners and silon loaders, and all these things were new and exciting, and my dad was putting them in, and it was a great time. Well, now it's the same way. The next generation needs that new and exciting, you know, technology advances coming onto the farm to continue to grow. Otherwise, you know, I talk with a lot of my fellow producers, all my kids aren't interested. Well, what have you done to change your dairy? Well, I haven't done anything really much, you know, bought a new tractor lately, but they haven't got that excitement of the young kids to get involved. So you need to continue to grow your operation, and in order to do that, you have to have a lot of things fall in place, but one thing's excitement and keeping a fun place to work every day, and we have employees, keep them happy to come to work and enjoy their work, and so it's a constant battle, but we look forward. We hope to be here 5 years from now.
John, the future cheese making?
Just to bounce back for a moment, about 10 years ago I gave interviews, and Wisconsin was really teetering on the cheese side, and members have confided to me since then that they had actually been looking in other states for other opportunities, and you know, California was going to take over and such, and now what you're seeing is Wisconsin has burst in varieties of cheese produced, hundreds of new varieties in the last few years. We're taking the lead from California again in cheese. We're building a comfortable lead over them. I'm actually very optimistic. I think cheese is very hot right now. It's hot and the cutting edge of fine dining, and as soon as we come out of this recession, I think that'll recover. I think cheese is cool right now. There's three magazines been formed about cheese in the last year, so just about cheese.
Ben, your grandbabies, are their kids going to be raising Angus?
Our son and daughter-in-law are getting into the farming operation. In fact, we signed the papers last week to start selling part of the farm to them.
When they ask you about the wisdom of that, you say, I feel good about it?
Go for it.
Go for it.
I think there's a place for the young people in agriculture. I believe there's opportunities for them. I think that they're going to have to take advantage of some new technologies. And, of course, the University of Wisconsin has put whatever resources are given to them to good use to develop better methodologies of producing new technologies to put in place to be successful in processing and managing their operations. And I think down the road you may see a few less operations just because of the comment that some of the kids don't want that kind of life. They want the structured life, not the challenges of farming life. But in every commodity area, I think you're going to see Wisconsin doing well.
That's great. Thank you, gentlemen, for a fascinating interview. Let me take away your advice. Get an Angus burger, put cheese on it, wash it down with three glasses of milk and one glass of cranberry juice.
That's right. Cranberry juice a day.
Sounds pretty healthy to me. Sounds pretty good. Thank you very much. I want to thank panelists Ben Brancel and John Umhafer and Bob Topple, a Waterloo dairy farmer, and Tom Lochner, executive director of the State Cranberry Growers Association. Gentlemen, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.